all the wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Squirty guy who claims he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a far-down key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. .com, where lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are European founding settler people, the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Had a lot of experience today, tonight, I should say. I was in a town not too far from where I live, a city not too far from where I live, actually St. Catharines, Ontario, and it was getting kind of late, and I was hungry, and my friend and companion was hungry too. My friend, though, is on a very restrictive diet, and not for weight or anything like that, but because of a fair number of allergies. So we decided what we were looking for was rice and vegetables, or perhaps chicken, but carefully cooked. All these little details are important. So I thought a good idea would be preferably a Japanese restaurant. Well, we found one that was supposed to be one. It's supposed to be a sushi restaurant that would have some other Japanese things, but it turned out to have a lot of Thai cooking and so on. Well, that's where the things began to get interesting or funny, as the case might be. First of all, we wanted to find out how the food was cooked, how the chicken might be cooked if it was fried, done in a wok. Right? Well, that's, I guess, the same thing, isn't it? This was quite difficult. It turned out that neither of the four waitresses who attempted to get in on this case could actually speak enough English. So one of them went on I think it was a tablet, and tried to translate a word. Now, because the method of preparation is is very important in this situation. It was important to get, well, what type of oils it cooked in. Well, we weren't getting far on that. Eventually, we made the best choice we could, which turned out not to be all that great. My order was a mess. I did not get exactly what I ordered. We were under time constraints. I was told, of course, that they were closing. Well, the food service would end at 9:30, and they would be closing at 10. So, in other words, order your food and better get out of here by 10. I don't like to operate under those circumstances, but that's what we did. And then came the bill, and a lot of restaurants that presumes you're going to give them a tip, and normally I would, but the tip, see, just in case you're a dummy, you can give a tip for 18% or 15%, or I think 10%. I chose to give the dollar amount, and I gave a tip of $1 on a $45 bill. I wanted to make the point that basically this restaurant is a disgrace. And what particularly bothers me, rather than just the niggling little details of the order and that, is the fact that a restaurant in Canada, in the English part of Canada, does not have people there who adequately speak English. And surely a waitress should be able to do the job without having to try to consult the tablet and then not get it. So I was really amazed. Amazed at what they get away with. And maybe what we put up with in this country. Frankly, I don't think they should be allowed to operate for the general public. If it's for just for Thai people or whatever language they were speaking, it's certainly not Japanese. Fair enough. But you know, the fact is, it's amateur night in Canada. They couldn't do the job. And I was not a very happy camper. I think we frankly put up with far, far too much. Well, there was an odd incident about 10 days ago. A Chinese student in Canada, from China, obviously very wealthy, living in a very, very posh condominium, showed up with his girlfriend in the underground parking lot around 6:30 at night, and was set upon by four, we're not told what they were like, but four people. In fact, there were surveillance cameras, and you can see these shadowy figures in hoodies, of course, who one of them tasers him, and the other two throw him into the van, and there's a driver of the van, and they take off. Apparently the girl was not harmed, and as usual, not much is revealed to us the taxpayer and tax-paying public, but allegedly there was no ransom notes, or no demands, allegedly. I don't know if that's true or not, but anyway, that was the story. Well, he turned up some days later, about 100 miles from where he'd been kidnapped, wandering on a country road, asking for help, and so on. Again, there's a lot that's not being told to us. Had a ransom being paid by the rich parents in China. Apparently, the fellow absolutely oozed wealth, first of all, where he lived. He also had several cars, several late model cars, very expensive. I believe one of them was a Lamborghini. Well, that sort of screams wealth. And you wonder, well, what are these people doing in our country, except bidding up the price of real estate? But anyway, finally a suspect has been arrested. Police north of Toronto say they've identified one of four suspects. Oh, no, he hasn't been arrested. Yeah, I think they've arrested one, but anyway, this is a suspect. York Regional Police say they've issued a Canada-wide warrant for a 37-year-old man from Toronto, who they allege was involved in the disappearance of Wan Zhen Lu from a Markham, Ontario condominium parking garage. Police say Lu was walking through the garage with a friend when he was attacked by three men and forced into the back of a van. He was found safe 3 days later, about 100 miles from Toronto. Police say Abdullah Adan, 37, is wanted on a charge of kidnapping, forcible confinement, assault, and assault with a weapon. Police say they're still working to identify the other men. It might have helped if the police had initially, because they had a surveillance camera, told us what the type of people they were looking for. Blacks. Well, at least that would narrow the lot. From the name, I would say that the person they're looking for, Abdullah Adan, is almost certainly Somali. So that raises an interesting question. Why would they target this Chinese student? Were they put up to it? We don't know. There are a lot of questions. But once again, the color of violent crime in the GTA, that's the Greater Toronto Area, is black. No big news there, no big revelation. It's been that way for more than 20 years. Blacks constitute roughly 7% of the population of the GTA, but are the perpetrators of about 70 to 75% of what's defined as violent crime, being murder, armed robbery, rape, and I guess some forms of assault. So this would fit in that. And instead of honestly discussing that, the police and the government, the law enforcement, at all levels, tries to avoid the topic, or worse still, make lame apologies. And by that I mean, we're one of the issues that really exercises the leftists in our society, including many in the judicial system, is the highly disproportionate number of Negroes in incarceration, in jail. Well, that must be a sign of endemic racism. You see, cultural Marxism is an idiot ideology. It starts off with the assertion, of course this is not possibly a proven scientific fact because it can't be proven, it's nonsense. But anyway, it starts off with the assertion that all men are equal. And therefore, when you look at results like the high incarceration rates of Negroes, they're incarcerated in numbers wildly out of proportion to their share of the population. So there isn't equality. So rather than going back and say, well, maybe our original premise was wrong. Oh, no, couldn't be. No, it must be racism. Which you would think would hardly pass pass muster with a grade 8 student. Why are the Jacks disproportionately in jail? Here's an idea. Because they disproportionately commit crime. Could that be possible? Well, no, of course, if you agree with that, then that kind of kiboshes is one of the central dogmas of cultural Marxism, that all men are equal. And therefore, the results ought to be equal. Well, a good friend of mine passed on this to me today. It's an opinion piece by a James Kulik, and he's writing in the Niagara This Week. It's a newspaper in the Niagara Falls area. Income inequality is going to explode the planet, writes this columnist James Kulik. As we sat around the gym locker room listening to Ron relay some woeful news story about a wealthy railroad tycoon who was making slightly less money than usual. My eyes glossed over, and I had to interject. "Screw him," I said, except I didn't use those words exactly. After all, it was literally locker room talk. My heart doesn't bleed for no billionaire. Well, this guy doesn't sure doesn't speak very good English. My dude Charlie agreed. I don't know why one guy has to write like an Negro here, but anyway, so you get the idea. That's your next article right there, said Charlie. I can see the headline now. My heart don't bleed for no billionaire. Actually, it would make a pretty good country song, too. Being not much of a country singer, I'm opting for the former rather than the latter. Because not only does my heart not bleed for no billionaire, but I genuinely think billionaires are a plague on civilization, the likes of which has never been seen before in human history. And that includes the actual plague. Now, that is pretty strong stuff. Donald Trump's a billionaire, and I don't think he's a plague on the planet. When the plague ravaged Europe in the 1340s, it only killed about 25 million people. According to research from Cornell University, the boardroom billionaires who control the world's largest corporations are the single largest driver of wealth, rising sea levels, which threatened to drown 20% of the world's population, or 2 billion people, by the year 2060. Not only are these evil corporations single-handedly destroying the planet, 71% of all global emissions come from just 100 mega corporations, but the billionaires who control them are using their vast wealth to make sure we're helpless to stop them. Well, hang on before we go any further in this rant by the not very literate James Kulik. Carbon emissions are not the cause of, well, he says, global warming. It's not at all clear. That the Earth is warming. In fact, there's significant reason to think that it's actually cooling. So global warming was actually yesterday's story. Now it's climate change. Well, you can't lose with climate change. Climate's always changing. But the assertion that these corporations are producing large quantities of hydrocarbon, which are leading to global warming, is nonsense. Carbon dioxide does not cause the Earth to warm up. It doesn't. It's sunspots, explosions on the sun. When there are a lot, the Earth warms up. When there are fewer, the Earth cools. Burning hydrocarbons, coal, gasoline, diesel, has nothing to do with it. And then, of course, the wild prediction. Well, if this happens, 2 billion people will drown by 2060. Well, why wouldn't they just go to higher ground? You know, unless the seas rose cataclysmically, you know, like a tsunami overnight, and that wouldn't be very likely. This is another one of those predictions that, like Al Gore made some years ago, that by 2013, the Arctic ice cap would have melted. So, yeah, the North Pole would be, I don't know, a rock or something. Well, you didn't miss the news. It didn't happen. But he continues. The Koch brothers have spent enormous amounts of money on lobbyists to ensure climate change legislature doesn't affect their shady dealings. He means climate change legislation. And this is in a mainstream paper. An illiterate rant. Their company, Koch Industries, releases about 24 million tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere annually, according to Jane Meyer's book, Dark Money, which you should read if you want to feel a crushing sense of doom about how billionaires are going to be the death of us all. If you're ever tempted to feel like billionaires and their massive corporations are your friend, just Google that YouTube clip of billionaire Mitt Romney scoffing at arguments about raising corporate tax rates by saying corporations are people. It makes my skin crawl. Well, I'm no great fan of Mitt Romney, but corporations do create jobs, create a lot of jobs. In fact, big business and is largely responsible for the fact that the planet can now support about 7 billion people. Back around the time I was born, Earth had around 1950, Earth had a population of about 2 billion. It has ballooned to 7 billion today. Back then, an increase of any significance would have been resulted in considerable starvation. But with the Green Revolution, the ability to grow a lot more crops per acre, especially in the Third World, the Earth has been able to mostly feed those people. I'd be one of the first to agree that growth should not be limitless and so on, and ever-expanding population is probably not a good thing. But the point being that without corporations, we would not have been able to have the ability to feed the people. James the illiterate Kulik continues, corporations are not people, but like people, they don't start out evil. Alas, money ruins everything. Financial arguments are cited in 21% of divorce cases, the largest single issue driving separation of couples. And that holds doubly true for corporations, because they have no conscience. They are cold-hearted money-making machines in singular pursuit of profits at all costs. I'm not sure, I don't even see what money arguments has to do with money arguments in relationships and in leading to divorce has anything to do with this. But even corporations who explicitly start out trying to be good end up being evil. When it was founded in the late 90s, a small tech startup, Google's official company motto was, "Don't be evil." But by 2015, they'd become a billion-dollar mega corporation, and they scrapped their old motto that year. Nowadays, Google does 50 evil things before breakfast. And the call continues in such vein. I won't belabor you with this. But this is the semi-literate nonsense that appears in a mainstream Canadian paper. Well, here's a company, Promo from Enbridge, and that's a major Canadian energy company. So here on the cover, goodbye drafts, hello comfort, energy smart savings. Warm up with our free home winter-proofing program. This is from the energy company. There's this Negro man, two little Negro children, and woman, presumably his wife. Quote, "I've noticed my bills are completely different from last year, up to 40% lower. The comfort level in my house is definitely more consistent." Mark H. for Niagara Falls. It's not clear that the man from the picture is indeed Mark H. Okay, so here is a promotional flyer for this energy company Enbridge, handed out in the Niagara Falls area, where blacks constitute, I doubt they constitute more than 2% of the population. So, okay, we turn to page 2. Warm up to energy savings, Enbridge can help. Now, here we have a white couple, and they've got two children, two little girls, and they taught other. Promo talks more and more about the draft proofing and new insulation and so on. And more on lower energy bills, healthier living, etc., etc. Now there's an application for the home winter proofing plan, and so on. Okay. Why the equality? I ask that. There's one white couple, one black couple for a promotion from Enbridge in an area where blacks constitute at best 2% of the population. Looking over that brochure, though, if you didn't know better, or if you didn't think much, you might think, well, you know, there's about an equal number of blacks and whites here. You know, but that's not reality. Well, what are they trying to do? Well, many corporations, either consciously or because of the left-wing advertising agencies they rely on, are pushing an agenda. And it's a race-mixing, multicultural agenda. They are trying to shape in our minds the world that they want to impose upon us. I say that very deliberately. Shape in our minds. You know, the world that they are going to make is already there in advertising. I've dealt with this before, that all the multiracial ads or mixed race couple ads, out of all proportion to their share of the population. Mixed race couples in Canada are about 5% of couples. You can watch a lot of advertising and you might well get the impression it might be 50%. Well, why is that done? Is this somehow inadvertent? No. It's part of a brain softening, mind bending exercise to prepare us for the brave, new, terrible world that they want to bring us through mass immigration. Here's an interesting little thought piece that was passed on to me. When labeling opponents extreme right wing, those on the left most frequently use that label as a pejorative to attack an individual messenger. In contrast, when those on the right use the term left in their label, they mostly use it to identify the idea or ideas that they find objectionable and apply that label to the larger collective that is left. Extreme right wing is usually used by the left not to describe ideas that they find objectionable, but to try to defame the messenger by labeling that person as with words that are considered to be mean, bad. Sad to say, the left has been winning the label war in the political arena. In addition to the left's extreme right pejorative, they've contrived other anti-concepts like Islamophobia and carbon pollution as effective labels to compromise our opponents. Like, you're an Islamophobe. Oh, well, what do you have to do to gain that slur? Well, criticize Islam or people who are Islamic. Islamophobe literally means to fear Islam. And that's supposed to be a bad thing. I mean, fearing Islam. I would argue it's a sensible thing to have a certain reservation about a religion that has been a religion of invasion and conquest almost from the get-go for over 1,200 years. That's only being prudent. But Islamophobia is one of these empty words that just means bad. You know, if you're an Islamophobe, you must be bad. And the author here says they do that because it works. And it works because those on the right keep trying to avoid being labeled. That's very important. Many people try to avoid being labeled. Oh, no, I'm not a racist, they'll say. Because they know the term racist is bad. The consequences are devastating to those on the right, and will continue to be so until the right rises to define itself correctly as being right, rather than allowing itself to be defined by the left. The irony is that the left intentionally associates extreme right wing with racism, fascism, Islamophobia, hate, and a whole host of negative associations that properly align with the left. Those who call someone extreme right do not associate with their pejoratives with freedom, life, liberty, and property, which are values of what is loosely called the right. Even though these are the very values that are properly represented by the right, and the values to which the left really, at its core, objects. As a consequence, the left's victory in the political war of labels has been won by default, thanks to disarmed and manipulated right-wingers. One condition to be ashamed of its own identity. Yes, and if you're ashamed of your own identity, you are already losing the war. Those on the left do not fear being labeled left-wing, extreme, or otherwise. The same cannot be said for those on the right who retreat or become defensive about being labeled right. Thanks to the misdirection of the left, the political direction continually avoided and therefore missed is the one that is just right, which explains why the political world leaps keeps turning left. Here are some misleading terms. Political correctness, or politically correct. It conveys a meaning, but is really too mild a term for the people it describes. What is political correctness is really cultural Marxism. And that has been a landscape-changing political landscape-changing concept. Cultural Marxism seeks to overturn the European Christian order and replace it with a form of bizarre egalitarianism. And so it attacks the family. It attacks sensible approaches to sexuality and so on. It is, in fact, very, very destructive and should be labeled as such. My friend objects to the term hate laws. And I agree with him. These should be called anti-free speech laws. They're not outlawing hate, incidentally. Hate's an emotion. I can still hate you in my heart for reasons good or bad. I could hate you because of your color. I could hate you because of your religion. I could hate you because you smoke. I could hate you because you're opposed to smoking. We cannot stop people's emotions. We can perhaps get them not to act on those emotions. So these are not really hate laws. These are anti-free speech laws. And I think it's very important to nail things for what they are. Ethnic cleansing. A friend of mine objects to that term. A more accurate term is genocide, as defined by the United Nations. When whites are driven out of an area, that really is a form of genocide. That's not ethnic cleansing, perhaps understates it. And when you understate, you mislead. As a good communicator, that should be the exact opposite of what you want to do. You don't want to mislead. You want to convey thoughts accurately. My friend also objected to the term immigration. as it's occurring here in Canada and the United States and Europe, it's not in immigration. It is an invasion, and that's the way we should describe it. Using the precise terms is really important. Here's an interesting comment that I just found on the internet. This refers to one of the Canadian political prisoners. And this was about Arthur Topham. And Arthur is facing more court cases. This is what he says. And they're going to actually be arguing about his bail conditions, or actually probation. He says that. 5 day. There's going to be a 5 day trial from on September 16th, 26th, 27th, October 10th, and October the 11th. They continue to drag this man through the courts and to persecute him. There's some of this material I am not allowed to share, so I will simply move on. One of the phenomena that really has the radical left very upset, and the government as well, is the Yellow Vest movement and the continued protests that are going on across Canada almost every Saturday against immigration. This is very much going to be an issue in this October, the year's October election. The intensity and the of the protests and the persistence or the tenacity, the protests have continued Saturday after Saturday, really has the cultural Marxist order somewhat spooked. You know, they've been used to far more passive Canadians. Well, a lot of Canadians are fed up with being passive. Where has that gotten them? Good behavior has simply allowed this country to be invaded, and not speaking up has not ameliorated things one little bit. Today, in the National Post, Andrew Coyne was very, very negative about a new piece of legislation going through the Quebec National Assembly, which will ban the use of religious headgear like hijabs and niqabs and burqas and turbans in a number of public service jobs. For instance, police officers, teachers, principals, judges, and so on. And the idea is this is a secular, we are in a secular society, and those serving us on behalf of the state must present as neutral, as civil servants, not as religious people on parade. Now, Andrew Coyne is really in a tizzy about this. He says, well, basically, it's targeting several religions, and as the people who follow these religions, Sikhs and particularly in Islam, are what's the latest political euphemism, people of color, third worlders or non-whites. It's also racially biased. Well, that's not the case. Nobody prevents a person who is a Sikh from being a policeman or a teacher if that person doesn't advertise it by wearing a turban, or is a female wearing a hijab. And as a matter of fact, the wearing of, for women in Muslims, the wearing of these covers, the hijab, which is like a big headscarf, or the niqab, which is a head-to-foot ghost outfit with a slit for the eyes, or a burqa, which is a head-to-foot robe with some sort of gauze over the eyes. That's not even a religious requirement. That's cultural, or a cultural habit. Anyway, Andrew Coyne's very upset about this. Why won't the West of Canada speak up? Shouldn't the federal government disallow such a legislation? The persecution of the human rights of these people, boo-hoo-hoo. There's no persecution of their human rights. They can follow their religion. They simply have to not make a public spectacle of themselves. And this is another problem with multiculturalism. It has brought all sorts of people to our shores whom we constantly have to accommodate. A far better approach would have been, in my opinion, to say, well, who can fit in best? Why should Canadians have to constantly trim and turn and compromise and change their ways to accommodate people who will not compromise? That's part of the absolutely tumbling idiocy of multiculturalism and diversity. Well, this is Paul Probb. You're on the fighting side of me here on whiteresistanceradio.com. I'm going to take a short musical break here, and get out of this particular program. I'm looking at a couple of great singers whom I played in the past, and I hope you like their music, and I'm trying to understand why this is giving me so much trouble. So I'm going to put some Merle Haggard on. Of course, Merle Haggard, the late Merle Haggard, has given us the title song of this program, The Fighting Side of Me, and a great singer, songwriter, spokesman for the working man, Merle Haggard. And here's a good family song. Papa Frank, the guitar man, was blind.
Daddy Frank played the guitar in the French harp. Sister played the ringing tambourine. Mom couldn't hear our pretty music. She read our lips every time we sang. That little band was all a part of living. And our only means of living at the time. And it wouldn't like no normal family combo. Cause Daddy Frank, the guitar man, was blind. Frank and Mom count on each other. Their one and only weakness made them strong. Hey, Mama did the driving for the family. And Frank made a living with a song. Home was just a camp along the highway. They'd pick up Edward's where it fitted down. Don't ever once remember going hungry. I remember Mom cooking on the ground. ground. Daddy Frank played the guitar and the French horn. Sister played the ring and the tambourine. Mama couldn't hear our pretty music. She read our lips to help the family sing. That little band was all part of living and our only living at the time. And it wasn't like no normal family combo. Oh, Daddy Frank, the guitar man was blind. Don't remember how they got acquainted. I can't recall just how it came to be. But there had to be some special help from someone. And blessed be the one who let it be. Peter caused my mama's lost hearing. Daddy Frank was born without his sight. And mama needed someone she could lean on. I believe the guitar man was right. Daddy Frank played the guitar and the French horn. Sister played the ring and the tambourine. Mama couldn't hear our pretty music. She read our lips and helped the family sing. That new band was all part of the living and our own means of living at the time. And it wasn't like old normal fun to combo. Oh, Daddy Frank, the guitar man was blind.
That's Merle Haggard.
Could be holding you tonight. Could quit doing wrong, start doing right. You don't care about what I think. I think I'll just stay here and drink. Hey, but when you get down, don't square no deal. At least you know the way I feel. Take all the money in the bank. Think I'd just stay here and drink. Listen close and you can hear that night jukebox playing in my ear. I just stay here and me now don't mean a thing. Since love ain't here, don't feel no pain. My mind ain't nothing but a total blame. I think I'll just stay here and drain. Thank you.
It's Merle Haggard's. I'll play some more by the Hag now. Break. That's Big City Sent Me Loose.
I wish a buck was still silver. It was back when the country was strong. Back before Elvis. Still work, still would. The best of the free life behind us now, and are the good times really over for good? And I will rolling downhill like a snowball headed for hell. Thank you. Wish Coke was still cola, and a joint the bad place to be. It was back before Nixon, light was all on TV. Before microwave ovens, when a girl still could, still would. Best of the free life behind us now, are the good times really over for good? I've been rolling down the hill like a snowball headed for hell, with no kind of chance for the flag of liberty. Ford and the Chevy would still last 10 years like they should. Is the best of the free life behind us now? Are the good times really over the good? Stop rolling downhill like a snowball headed for hell.
Few Merle Haggard songs, always like that. This is Paul Fromm, you're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka's